When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball discussion, hosted by Inside the Hall founder and editor, Alex Bozich. Since 2007, Inside the Hall has been trusted by IU fans across the globe to be the one-stop shop for IU basketball news, commentary, and analysis. Join us over at InsideTheHall.com. That's InsideTheHall.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Podcast on the Brink. Pleased to be joined for the first time since I was looking back at the calendar, early December, by a good friend, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, and I wanted to get Zach on to kind of get a lay of the land of where everything is right now in this IU season, obviously talk about last night's win over Minnesota, look ahead to the weekend and the weeks to come. Zach, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. Always good to be back. Always good to be back when positivity rates are declining.
Positivity on IU basketball is increasing after see what I did there? Three and one in their last four. So they beat Iowa, they beat Northwestern, lose at Ohio State, which I don't think was unexpected for anybody. Maybe the way they lost, a little bit surprising considering they've been in most games in Big Ten. I think that was really the only game that they weren't in Big Ten play for the majority of the game. And then last night they beat Minnesota. The win last night was interesting to me from the standpoint of we haven't really seen Indiana very often play that well offensively, particularly when they're turning it over 17 times. You look at the fact that they scored 82 points and had 17 turnovers. You know, if they had closer to their season average, it's a 90-point game for them, which isn't something we've seen very often. You were obviously there. What did it look like in terms of what was working for IU? Obviously, getting to the free throw line was once again a big deal, and they hit at a better rate than usual, made some threes, but it seemed like a more balanced offensive game than what we've seen at times this season overall for Indiana.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think, I was curious, and this is kind of one of those, moments where a coach will probably never be fully candid and you understand why. But even listening to Archie Miller talk about the turnovers post-game, I sort of wondered if, 17 is too high of a number. 25 points off 17 turnovers is too high of a number. But I sort of wonder if he was encouraged by the turnovers within the – I want to say – if he was encouraged by the overall performance within which you would need to take the turnovers in context. And what I mean by that is there was a lot post-game of him talking about wanting guys to relax. Rob Fennessy came up in this regard. I think you may have said something similar about Al Durham. He obviously talked a lot about Jerome Hunter's confidence. And his point was just just sort of this idea of we don't need to be thinking maybe sometimes as much as we are. And, to kind of go back and reflect on Fennessy's performance as an example, 10 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 4 turnovers. But this is a player, Rob Fennessy, who we have seen substantially cut his turnover rate this season. It's down from 22.8% to 15.7%. but his assist rate's actually down basically just as much, 28.3% to 20.7%. And I wonder if at some level, you know, maybe even again, just kind of almost like privately or, you know, quietly, Archie would be encouraged that once his team got into the flow of that game, the way it was running, that they were willing to start taking some chances and that they got, and yes, at times they were sloppy, undeniably, but there were also a lot of times where I think that Indiana's willingness to kind of let the game dictate how they were going to play and take some chances and just play a little bit more free flowing offensively, I think was also really encouraging. It seemed really encouraging in listening to Archie Miller talk about it post game. And, you know, I mean, the performances you get quietly, some of them are actually really good. You know, Finnessy, yes, the four turnovers, but everything else about what he does is really good. His defense is really good. You know, his you know, just general sort of command of the floor is really good. I think Armon Franklin is still a little bit limited by his ankle, maybe more than a little bit, but he still has 11.6 rebounds, 4 assists. Al Durham, 16 points on just 6 field goal attempts. And then, of course, Jerome Hunter, 16 points also on 6 field goal attempts. Indiana, you know, all the other elements are a part of what I think Indiana would probably consider the formula, you know, plus 10 in rebounds. 23 free throws made, 7 of 12 from the three-point line. I think Minnesota was only 11 of 31 after halftime from the floor. So, you know, it's not that this is necessarily going to be the game Indiana's looking to play every single time they go out. Like, I would be kind of surprised if this is the game Indiana's looking to play Saturday against Michigan State. But I think if you're Archie Miller, there were enough times where it felt like you saw – individual players and therefore Indiana collectively almost just kind of turn its brain off a little bit and just play on instinct and play in rhythm. Now, listen, Minnesota is abysmal away from home. Defensively, I think I saw a statistic going into yesterday that they have the widest margin, efficiency margin home versus road defensively in the country. It's certainly at least in the Big Ten. So let's not act like this is replicable, you know, when Indiana goes to Purdue or when Indiana hosts Michigan. But if you then lay that on the context of, as you said, a team that's won 3 of 4, a team, you know, whose season really looked like it was going somewhere kind of ugly when they were 9-8, and all of a sudden they spent the last 2 weeks basically just doing lots of taking care of business, a team that's probably thinking like every other team in the country about trying to peak at the right time, I think there were some encouraging elements to last night's game.
I think you make a good point about peaking at the right time because, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it seemed like Indiana was destined for, at best, the bubble and at worst, possibly not making the tournament at all. And now as you kind of take stock of where they are, I don't want to say that they're completely safe by any means, that, you know, they're 12-9 overall, they're 7-7 in the Big Ten, but, you know, you start to look at some of the projections. I know Joe Lunardi had, you know, he's doing his daily briefing of bracketology every day now. It comes out on his Twitter account, and I was looking at that this morning, and he had his last four teams in, and like the first four teams that are getting a bye, and he didn't have Indiana in there. So that suggests to me that they're not necessarily right on the bubble. They've moved themselves in a little bit better position. And I think, you know, what this 3-1 stretch has done for them, if they're able to go and win on Saturday against Michigan State and then potentially steal a game somewhere else the rest of the regular season, they could be putting themselves in a much better position in terms of seeding and giving themselves a chance to advance. And I've said now for a couple of months that, you know, and I think I've talked to you about this a little bit, you know, you kind of look at the natural progression of what Archie Miller's trying to do at Indiana. And, you know, the first year obviously was a transition year. The second year, a little bit of a disappointment given the personnel that he had. But last year, they were probably going to make the tournament. And I've said that this year, you know, the goal has to be not just to make the tournament, but to give yourselves a chance to win, and peaking at the right time is going to potentially give them a chance to get a, maybe a little bit more favorable seed than we thought a couple weeks ago, and give them a chance to be in a position to win a game when the tournament is announced. I mean, what are you thinking right now, just in terms of Indiana's position? I mean, do you agree with me that they've kind of, I don't want to say, like I said, I don't want to say they're off the bubble, but it does feel like they're in a little bit more secure of a spot than we were when a couple weeks ago, when it kind of felt like the sky was falling.
No, I think that's very fair. And I think, you know, one of the things I feel like I say all the time this time of year, I said it on our podcast earlier today, is that people tend to view the bubble through the lens of just the team that they follow. If their team is on the bubble, and they don't appreciate that it's none of this happens in a vacuum. It's all fluid. It's all kind of moving back and forth. And, you know, in a strange way, Indiana's win last night was actually much more valuable to Indiana because Minnesota lost, and because you deprived another team on the bubble, one that plays in the same conference you do, one you only play one time this season, it's an okay win for Indiana. It'll go on the resume. It's quad two. It'll probably stay there. It would have been a really good win for Minnesota. And to deprive Minnesota of that, I think was as important, if not more important, than Indiana actually winning the game. And so I think that it's, you have to remember that the pieces are always moving around. And you may look at your team one night and say, oh, they look so bad. They look, you know, they're frustrating, whatever. But don't forget that, like, you know, there's probably four other bubble teams whose fans are saying the exact same thing, you know, somewhere else. I think what Indiana's done, again, in the last couple of weeks, as I said, is just a lot of taking care of business. You pick up a really valuable win against Iowa. You avoid what would have been a mildly disastrous loss at Northwestern. No, the Ohio State game wasn't good, but at the end of the day, it's only one loss. And it's a completely acceptable loss. The committee's not going to look at it and say, boy, Indiana just played poorly that day. They're just going to look at it and say, Indiana went on the road to a top 10 team, couldn't hang. That's not surprising. That's why they're on the bubble. We move on. And then they came home, and again, they get a quad two win against a team that they really needed to prevent from getting a quad one win. I'm really curious about this weekend. Michigan State is, I think people outside of East Lansing are still having a bit of trouble sort of wrapping their minds around the context of Michigan State this year, because we are so used to Tom Izzo being so good and the Spartans being so good under Tom Izzo. They are incredibly vulnerable this year. They're 4-9 in the league. Only one of their four wins has come against somebody other than Penn State or Nebraska. It's a team with a lot of problems. It's a team that's not going to the NCAA tournament. It's a team that I don't cover it, so I can't sit here and say this empirically, but it's a team that just feels kind of done with this season in a lot of ways, frankly. And so this is the kind of game that if you're Indiana and if you are starting to piece some things together, and what we've seen these last couple of weeks isn't just, you know, a little bit of fortune and a couple of breaks. This is a game that I think you win somewhat comfortably. I'm not saying 25 points, but you know, you maybe not unlike last night where it can be back and forth for a while. That's fine. But when it's crunch time, you're in control pretty much the whole way. To set yourself up to attack the last 2 weeks of the season, which had, you know, right now contains three games. I think we all suspect there'll be a fourth added in there somewhere, maybe fifth, but I think probably just fourth. Three games, all of which though right now at Rutgers, Michigan at home, at Purdue, would represent sort of like no real harm in losing this. Winning it would be a huge boost kind of opportunities. I just think that if this Indiana team, whatever its flaws, whatever its shortcomings, whatever its limitations, is starting to kind of power itself up to be something akin to the best version of itself next month, then I think that Saturday is the kind of game where you make a little bit of a statement, not in terms of saying, oh, you know, we beat Michigan State. I mean, a lot of people beat Michigan State this year. Iowa beat them by 30 in East Lansing just a few days ago. But you sort of say, you know, if you're an NCAA tournament team, this is the kind of game where you say this team's none of our business and they're just not going to trouble us that much. And so I'm interested to see how Indiana kind of handles that Saturday afternoon.
Hey, it's Jared. I'm going to jump in here real quick to talk about Homefield Apparel, our friends at homefieldapparel.com. And there are several reasons why you need to go to homefieldapparel.com to upgrade your Indiana University sports wardrobe. Number one, all of their materials are so comfortable. I have the hoodies. I have a crew neck sweatshirt. I just received my LEO t-shirt that they have. And all of the materials are so soft. It feels so good against your body. And what's nice is that they still feel soft even after you wash them. Because a lot of materials, you get them, you wash them, they don't feel as nice. Homefield Apparel stuff really does. So you can count on that. Plus, they have logos there that you're not going to find anywhere else. That's kind of their thing. You know, they have over 90 different schools that they work with now. They go and find these old brand marks and logos and mascots that, you know, haven't been used in 40, 50 years, sometimes longer, and they bring them back. And so it's this great way to indulge your love of nostalgia, find these old logos that you haven't seen. And so when you go there, you'll be able to browse. I mean, for Indiana stuff, they have, you know, 2 pages worth of gear that you can see, stuff on t-shirts, stuff on crew necks, stuff on sweaters, such comfortable stuff. And it's not just IU. You know, you may have people in your life that went to school somewhere else. Sorry for those folks, but, you know, they may have. And you can find so much gear for other schools as well. And even better, you can save when you go there because our promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, will help you save 20% on your entire order. So go to homefieldapparel.com, use that promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and get 20% off your entire order. All right, back to the show.
Yeah, Michigan State's interesting because, you know, you look at back at the preseason, I don't have the unofficial or official unofficial media poll right in front of me here, but I'm pretty sure they were picked somewhere in the top five. They may have even been picked third or fourth in the preseason. And I was guilty of kind of buying into the whole narrative of Rocket Watts is going to be a point guard and kind of burst onto the scene. Aaron Henry's now in his third year. He's going to be reliable on the wing as a playmaker, and they're adding Joey Hauser. And I think the thing that we missed, and like I said, a lot of us did, was just how important not only Cassius Winston was to that team, but Xavier Tillman last year. Arguably, two of the, what, 5 or 6 best players in the Big Ten last year, maybe 7 or 8. I don't know where you want to put Tillman, but he was definitely up there. And Winston was right there at the top with Luka Garza. How surprised are you at just how inept Michigan State's been this year? Because it's not that they're just kind of middle of the pack. I mean, you look at their KenPom rating right now. They're 71st. As you mentioned, they just lost by 10 at Purdue, which there's no shame in that, but losing by 30 at home to Iowa, and you know, 2 of their 4 wins, as you said, were over Nebraska, and their other Big Ten wins were over Rutgers at home and Penn State at home by only 2 on the Penn State win. So Michigan State, to me, is arguably one of the more disappointing teams, not just in the Big Ten, but in the country.
No, I mean, I think that's fair. And I think, I mean, listen, you know, even the best coaches have these seasons. Obviously, Mike Krzyzewski's going through something similar right now at Duke. You know, what was that famous season Bob Knight had where they went 8-10 in the league? I think it was 1989.
Kyle Perry's going through the same thing at Kentucky right now.
Yeah, and I think there's something, you know, I think a lot of people have theorized, and there's probably something to it, that, you know, this is a tough year to be young in college basketball because of how interrupted the offseason was and how much, you know, I'm not sure we have made as much of this in basketball as we did in football. Like maybe just overall, like, you know, it feels like people were surprised when we started seeing cancellations and postponements and shutdowns for basketball. Like somehow COVID was just going to go away after football season. But, you know, I mean, I think about like listening. I remember something Tom Allen said midway through football season where he said there was a time in the offseason where Indiana couldn't put five offensive linemen in the same drill together. And so they were trying to figure out how to practice offensive line play without a full offensive line. And imagine what that looks like in basketball. Because it's, again, it's not like these guys aren't going through some of the same things. And then, of course, in Michigan State, as an example, you lose time because you have to shut down and there's different things. And, you know, obviously Michigan State's maybe not as young as Duke or Kentucky. Certainly is in the post. And I think that's one area when you bring up Xavier Tillman, I think that's one area where maybe they've lost some things, is that this is a tough year to be trying to break in somebody brand new. I also just wonder, you know, if Tom Izzo could have his time again. And I know we don't want to turn this into, you know, podcast on the Breslin, but would he try, would he be so adamant about Watt's transformation? You know, if you could look at him and say, you know, Tom, is this the right year to ask Rocket Watts to just change his position? You know, I think that's probably played into it a little bit too. But I think more than anything else, it's just, you know, I suspect we've learned that even Tom Izzo, you know, and even Michigan State, as successful as they've been in the last however many years, they're just like everybody else. They need good point guard play and they need a good big man. Otherwise, it's kind of hard to live in this league. And I think that, you know, you've had fits and spurts here. You know, I mean, you've had good individual performances at times, but it's just never felt like Michigan State could settle on something, you know, and you know, like a guy like, I mean, like, you know, the guy that flashed, like, I think a couple weeks ago, Marcus Bingham had like 6 points and 9 rebounds against Penn State. It's like, oh, that's interesting. And then you look at it, he's committing close to 6 fouls per 40 minutes. Julius Marble's committing 8 fouls per 40 minutes. You know, Matty Sissoko, 7 fouls per 40 minutes. Thomas Keith, you're 7.7 fouls per 40 minutes. You just, I think you're right about Winston. I think you're right about Tillman. I'd have to go back and look. I think I may have had Tillman on my first team All Big Ten ballot last year. But I just think that it's going to be tough to lose those two sort of anchor points in any season. I think it's tougher in a season like this. And I also think, and I think we saw this with football a little bit as well, I also have wondered if there weren't just going to be a couple teams that, you know, maybe under more normal circumstances, you know, that they could struggle for a while, but then kind of get some things together. But this season has just not allowed teams to collect themselves very much because, you know, you don't know day to day, you know, you can say you're blocking it out of your mind, but like, you're getting up and getting tested at 8 a.m. every morning. Like it's ever present there. Oh, well, maybe we don't practice today. You know, if I test positive, I'm out for 2 weeks. You know, oh, well, we did this well, but then this just got blown up. We're not playing. We were supposed to play tomorrow, but now we're not playing tomorrow. You know, I've always sort of wondered if this season wasn't just going to basically just throw one too many wrenches in a couple team systems. And I wonder if there's some of that with Michigan State too. And so, again, like football, you know, we sort of told ourselves it would be normal and then we told ourselves it would be completely abnormal. And then we acted shocked when Penn State and Michigan were terrible. Maybe we're kind of seeing, you know, the basketball version of that with Michigan State a little bit here.
Yeah. A lot of good points there on Michigan State. I'm curious, you mentioned the rescheduling of games from an IU perspective, you know, that they could play, they could get a game or two made up. What have you been able to, I'm not sure if you've asked around to the league office or if you've followed this very closely, but what have you been able to gather just in terms of what the Big Ten's priority is going to be in terms of making up games at this point? And do you expect that we'll hear something sooner rather than later on when Indiana might? I think the two games in question are at Michigan State and at Michigan. And it sounds like to me, based on the comments that Juwan Howard made earlier this week, that there's not a lot of enthusiasm, and I don't really blame him. Not a lot of enthusiasm from the Michigan side of things to play. I think it was going to have to be like 10 games in 20 days, which, you know, if I'm Michigan and you know, they're probably the number three overall seed right now in the tournament. I see no reason from their perspective to want to go out of their way to make up a ton of these games. So I'm just curious kind of what you're hearing, if anything, on the rescheduling of games, how the Big Ten's approaching this, how they're going to go about this, because I think it's definitely pretty interesting. I mean, I'm looking at it from an Indiana perspective. I mean, I'm sure Indiana would rather play at Michigan State than at Michigan if given the choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the first answer is nothing's off the table. Or the first piece of the answer. The second piece is nothing's been rescheduled to my knowledge yet. I checked with the league office earlier this week. There was a rumor found me last night saying that Indiana rescheduled at least one of its games. I checked with Indiana last night. They have not heard anything in that regard yet. I think there is a growing acceptance within the league that not everybody's going to play in a full schedule. Could be very, very difficult. You know, getting everybody to 20 games. I mean, Michigan's literally at 10 games and they've got five. Like, you're going to get them to play 10 games between now and March 7th. That's insane. You know, they've got five more on the schedule, but, you know, it doesn't seem like there's a ton of appetite for moving. It's interesting because I think this has been suggested more on the women's side than the men's. It doesn't seem like there's a ton of appetite for moving opponents around. So, like, basically, like, oh, well, we could maybe get to 20 games if we just scrap this game but have this team play these two teams instead, that kind of thing. And obviously, we've seen Nebraska have to engage in a pretty hectic schedule here the last couple weeks to make up for some things. But, you know, in the last 11 days, they've played six times. And they'll play again on Saturday against Purdue at home.
It almost feels like, though, that the league has asked Nebraska to be a sacrificial
lamb, it may well be, honestly. I mean,
I'm not saying I'm not saying that they've asked them that specifically, but it's almost like, hey, will you play Maryland twice at Maryland? It would really help out the scheduling and Nebraska. What do they have to lose at this point, right? I mean, their season's going nowhere, so it's almost like one of those things where they say, sure, I mean, we'll do it. But that's kind of why I brought up Michigan, and that Michigan's not going to agree to play Indiana two games in a row in Bloomington. That's just not going to happen.
Right. Well, and then you also just get into the logistics of things. I mean, Indiana plays on the 27th and the 6th. Michigan State plays on the 28th and the 7th. So you could easily fit a game in there, you know, maybe play a game on the Wednesday or the Tuesday. You know, you'd maybe have to ask Michigan State to do a quick turnaround or Indiana to do a quick turnaround to the weekend. The problem is Michigan plays on the 4th, which is the Thursday. So if you were, you know, if you were going to try and fit it in, what you'd basically have to ask, let's say, Indiana to do is play Michigan at home on the 27th, play Michigan in Ann Arbor 2 days later, which would be the Monday, then play, let's say, Michigan State on the Wednesday, and then finish with Purdue on the road, and then finish with Purdue on the Saturday. So four games in 8 days. Now, maybe you do that. I don't know. I also wonder if the league would look at a game like Indiana-Michigan and just say, this isn't as relevant to, you know, figuring out the top end of the conference, so we're going to try and prioritize other games that need to get put back on the schedule. But it also, you know, I think if you presented that to Archie Miller, he might say, well, hang on, you know, we've been clean all year. We've taken care of our – and not that you're casting aspersions on other teams. And I know even Michigan didn't necessarily get shut down because of positive test, but because of other issues and, you know, recommendations. But, you know, if you're Indiana, I think you'd be within your rights to say, well, 4 games in 8 days, what have we done to deserve that? Now, I will also say, and this is a sense I've gotten for a couple months now from around the league, is that I think coaches have been preparing themselves for that possibility. You know, and like it wouldn't surprise me if there's a folder in our Archie Miller's desk, at least proverbially speaking, somewhere that says this is what we do if we have to play 4 games in 8 days. I think everybody has understood that, like, that may just be necessary at some point, because cancellations and postponements might lead to, if you know, if Indiana's going to play one game in, like, what was it, like 17 days or something like that in January, they're going to have to make up that time somewhere else. At this point, it does seem more sensible to just sort of say, you know, maybe Indiana and Michigan State just make up that game in the middle of the week and you don't trouble it. Because then, you know, because then if you do that to Michigan, you're asking Michigan to go Saturday, Monday, Thursday, Sunday. You know, that's not exactly wholly equitable either. But it just, it's going to be imperfect, and Indiana fans probably won't like this comparison. It's probably going to be, I wouldn't be surprised if we wind up in a situation a little bit akin to where Big Ten football was back in December, where they just sort of had to say, listen, this isn't ideal. This isn't even really fair, but we're just going to do it because we've got to get to some sort of resolution here that is good for the conference in a way that gets all boats to rise. And you know what, at the end of the day, Ohio State plays for a national championship and it's probably good for the whole conference. But I just think I think everybody is at least going to have to be prepared. And I do think on the team side, the coach side, the program side, people have been prepared for the potential for there to just kind of be a bit of a nuclear scenario wherein maybe Indiana is asked to play. Maybe they tried to kick that. Maybe they kicked that Purdue game to the Sunday and Indiana is asked to play Saturday, Monday, Thursday, Sunday, something like that. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Doesn't feel like anything's off the table. I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, Zach. Right now, there's 5 Big Ten teams in the top 14 of the KenPom rankings: Michigan, Illinois, Ohio State, Iowa, and Wisconsin. If you had to pick 2 of those teams who are most likely to make the Final Four, who would you pick and why at this point? Now, this is obviously without seeing the bracket or anything like that, not knowing who's going to have injuries or anything else. But of those 5, who, if you had to pick 2, who do you feel would be most likely to make the Final Four at this point?
I think my 2 favorites would probably be the 2 teams that I think are kind of at the top end of the conference right now, which are Michigan and Illinois. And it's largely because, you know, Iowa can score in bunches, but we have, as we've seen, they struggle to defend. That's nothing new in Iowa City. And when I look at the way a team like Indiana can shut Iowa down, just switch all your screens, because Iowa can't really beat you off the dribble. So just switch all your screens, really get in Wieskamp's face and throw Garza a lot of different looks, and basically just be willing to let Garza have some points as long as nobody else does any scoring. I think they are vulnerable in a tournament setting. I like Ohio State. I think their defensive number, you know, quietly is a little bit overstated at times. Just, you know, the suggestion that they aren't very good defensively. But I don't love a team where in a tournament setting, I don't love a team where I watch them and I'm not totally sure where the ball goes in a late clock situation. I'm not totally sure, okay, your offense just isn't working tonight. The shooting lines are bad. You're just not, you know, so who's going to go get you 25 points? Like, I can answer you that with Michigan. I can certainly answer you that with Illinois. I'm not all the way there with Ohio State. Wisconsin I like. But on the sly, Wisconsin really hasn't been that good for a while. I mean, they're 3-4 in their last 7. I think they're, you know, if you look at kind of their numbers in conference play, they haven't actually been that efficient offensively. They're 9th in the league in efficiency, adjusted efficiency per KenPom. in Big Ten games. They're 11th in offensive rebound percentage. They're 10th in two-point percentage, or 9th in three-point percentage, which is not, you wouldn't feel like anyway, is what the, given what we saw out of this team a year ago, you wouldn't feel like that is what the formula would be for this group of players. But it has just been too easy at times, I think, to get Ohio State, or excuse me, get Wisconsin out of what it wants to do offensively. And I think that, that for whatever reason, some guys just haven't quite made the jump. On the flip side, I love Michigan. I think Dickinson is great. I like a team that's got, again, not necessarily for three or four elite scorers, but three or four guys that if things break down, they can just, you can put them in a ball screen situation and they can just go downhill and maybe they draw a foul. Maybe they can kick. Obviously it's a team that can shoot the ball very well. It's a team that can score the ball very well. I'm always intrigued by teams that are top 10 in efficiency, both offensively and defensively. And then with Illinois, it's really as much as anything just about, you know, the two kind of individuals. And that's not to take away from some of the supporting cast they've got there. But, you know, when you've got a guard like Ayo Dosunmu that can take over a game and has repeatedly taken over games in sort of late game situations, and you've got a center who can change, who is so defensively disrupted, defensively disruptive. I think those are really difficult things to prepare for from a schematic perspective on a short turnaround. I think it's a very difficult thing to prepare for. Let's say Illinois could get to an Elite Eight. I think they're a difficult team to prepare for on, you know, basically 24 hours notice. I think there have been times where it feels a little bit like Illinois is kind of caught between these two different identities because they got a lot of, you know, smaller guards that are good in the open floor and can run. And then you've got Coburn, who's not necessarily the most kind of up and down, you know, player. He's not as quick in transition all the time. And you know, the game maybe needs to move a little bit more slowly for him at times, but everything you do defensively is built around him. So you kind of have to hold on to him. But at the same time, I just think like in a tournament setting, sometimes teams that are still good, when you can basically just strip them down to their most basic parts, and teams that are still good and still have ways to consistently score and affect the game, even if for whatever reason the game plan just isn't working that night, are typically more dangerous. And that's why I would go with those two personally, out of the five you mentioned.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I want to get you out of here on this, and it's kind of just a big picture question in general. With obviously, this is a different year in college sports in general. You covered college football in the fall, IU football, and they had a great season. It was different with no fans, and it's kind of carried over here into basketball where there have not been fans games again for Big Ten basketball. But, you know, the last conversation we had was in early December, and the season had just started a couple weeks ago. And now that we're, what, less than 2.5 weeks left in the regular season, thereabouts. We're getting down to kind of the nitty gritty here. We're going to have conference tournaments, I think. At least that's the plan as of right now. And then they're going to have everybody in Indiana in various locations playing the NCAA tournament, which I think that was the goal for everybody when the season started. But just in general, I'm kind of curious what your just overall assessment has been in terms of how college basketball in general has navigated this season. I feel like at the beginning of the season, when we started to see like cancellations or postponements, there was a lot of, you know, just kind of anxiety and different opinions being thrown out on Twitter, different coaches that said things like, hey, let's postpone the season till February, let's play May Madness. And it was, you know, it's been full steam ahead. And for the most part, to me, I mean, in terms of it being as normal as it could under these circumstances, it feels like things have gone pretty well. Now, I say that as somebody who hasn't gone to a game all season, and you have been to, I think, almost every home game, if not all of them. So I'm just kind of curious what it's been like from your perspective. Do you feel like, and I don't even really know how you would quantify this, but has it been a success? Has it been better, worse in what you expected going in, or did you just really not have any expectations at all?
I was muted there. Okay. I'll get used to that just as soon as we can start recording podcasts in person again. I think I go back to something I said earlier, which is that it surprised me the degree to which it's sort of, we went through college football season. And, you know, college has been a unique beast in this because, you know, kids can't not go to class. Like, in theory, and I know like baseball didn't do a bubble, but like in theory, you could look at every member of your clubhouse and say, you go home, you go to the game. That's it. You know, and when we're on the road, we eat alone. We don't leave the hotel, blah, blah, blah. Now, it's not to say that not to say people won't break that, but the point is you can, in theory, set that out. College kids can't do that. Even if the majority of them are in online classes, or if the majority of their classes are online, they're still going to have some sort of interaction. Like, where are these kids going to go eat? No offense, but it's not realistic to tell a 19-year-old that he's going to cook all his own meals. You know, how are these kids going to get academic support? How are these kids going to, you know, get worked on by a training staff, or, you know, if they need to, you know, be in a therapy pool or get an x-ray or God knows what. So like, college sports has always been a different animal within this compared to the pros. And I think I was surprised in November, and not that wave of shutdowns and postponements early on wasn't jarring for everyone, but I think I was surprised in November at the degree to which the reaction to all of that was, oh my God, how is this manageable? When we literally just spent the previous 4 months going through a football season with all the same problems and all the same issues. And the entire time, everyone had basically said, we're going to be as safe as we can, and we're going to take every reasonable precaution we can. We recognize that's not going to be perfect and there's still going to be issues, but we're all going to do the best we can. And that's what it comes down to. We're all just going to do the best we can. And at the end of it, we'll have at least been able to say that we had a football season, you know? And, you know, I think basketball has had some different challenges. You know, from a COVID perspective, obviously the winter has been very ugly compared to where we were in the summer and early fall. You know, from an atmosphere perspective, I don't know exactly what it is, but an empty basketball arena feels very odd, even compared to an empty football stadium. Like watching a football game in a mostly empty stadium, it sort of seems weird, but it's not the same experience. It's not the same level of sort of surreal or interruptive as a basketball game in an empty arena. And I think there's probably a variety of reasons for that, but one way or the other. And so there's been that element of it too. And I mean, I would even go so far as to say that I think that part of what's maybe made this basketball season a little bit jarring is the fact that Duke, Michigan State, Kentucky all stink. And, you know, that it's your two best teams are probably Gonzaga and Baylor. And, you know, it hasn't even had, you know, sort of this, I know people come out of the things like the college football playoff decrying sort of this, you know, this closed shop at the end of college football, at the upper end of college football. But I think in a way it was almost comforting too, or at least normalizing, I guess, to just see, you know, Notre Dame, Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State in the playoffs. Like, okay, even in a pandemic, you know, there's still some things that we can count on as sort of fundamental truths. But I think that everyone, just like with football, kind of had that moment of panic and then just sort of set about figuring out how to make it work. And I think everyone has acknowledged it's not going to be perfect. You know, as we discussed earlier, it's near impossible. I mean, I think Michigan is the best team in the Big Ten. I'm not sure it's close, but I think it's also going to be near impossible to get Michigan to play a full Big Ten schedule. I've said many times, I think that this NCAA tournament field is going to be more high major heavy than you know, what we've seen in recent years. I think I did a piece earlier this week, and it would have been, I think, Monday. So I think on the Sunday bracket matrix update, there were only six teams among the 37 at-large places in bracket matrix's most recent aggregated field outside the Big Six conferences. And that's compared to 12 teams that made it outside the six high major conferences in 2019, the last time we had a tournament. But I think we're going to look at that. We're going to look at so much else this season and say, you know what, it was imperfect, but we had a season, we made it work. And yes, you know, there's always the need to be safe and different things like that. But there's also, you know, there are the, you know, the social arguments, the competitive arguments, the arguments to just say at some level, we need to find ways to just keep moving forward, even if sometimes slowly. This has, I think, achieved that, or is certainly on course to achieve that. And if we wind up having an NCAA tournament that is uninterrupted and can make it all the way through to a national championship game, which of course the NCAA strongly believes it can, then I think we will wind up looking at that the same way we looked at football, and we'll say, listen, it was imperfect, and we're always kind of going to mentally put an asterisk next to this season, not really good or bad, just to say it was different. It was a completely different challenge. It was a completely different environment. You know, let's hope and pray nobody ever has to do this specifically again. That doesn't mean that this year's champion will be more or less, you know, sort of authentic or whatever. It just means they'll have had to navigate a completely different set of challenges. But more than anything, we'll have made it happen. We'll have made it work. And we will all hope when it's over that by next October, we're not doing this anymore. Or at least that a lot of these issues have been resolved and a lot of these restrictions have been eased and something approaching normal is what we can expect out of the 2021-2022 season.
In other words, Zach, you're basically saying that you can't wait to eat Chick-fil-A in the press room with me at Assembly Hall again.
I bought a Chick-fil-A sandwich last night. All they had left was spicy. I still went for it. Second half was interesting.
So is that like open? Is it like one location? I haven't been.
There's like one concession stand open at Assembly Hall for these. So
for families and stuff can go too.
Yeah. So family can come in. And they all sit on the east side, the east mm-hmm. bowl, the east stage, whatever you want to call it. They all sit in the lower level or the main level. They have to be spaced out, of course, and they all have to be wearing masks. and there is one concession stand open for everyone. So, I mean, you know, it's strange. We as media, we're not allowed to set foot on the court. You know, we don't go into the press room. We don't go into the tunnel. We enter the south through the south lobby, and all the media seating is in the south bleachers, underneath the what do they call that? The 70 Spirit of 76 Club.
It's basically where we sat back before they changed the media.
But we can't go on the floor. We can't go in the press room. You know, every once in a while, I'll just walk up into the stands, mostly just because those seats are the most comfortable in the arena. And I'll just watch, you know, because I can keep my distance up there. Obviously, I'll just watch warm-ups from up there. But, like, I mean, I haven't set foot in the north end of Assembly Hall. I haven't set foot on the floor of Assembly Hall. You know, it really is weird. It's very strange. But, you know, you sort of remind yourself that it is everybody doing their best to make this work. And, you know, just to be quite frank too, I mean, I was thinking about this last night. It's a reason to get out of the house. So,
yeah,
you know, and there's not a lot of those right now. With the weather, the way it's been, and obviously everything going on with COVID. So I'm not going to complain about that now. You know, hit me in late March and I'll be exhausted because I'll be covering the whole tournament, whatever Indiana does. Obviously, we're all hands on deck for that. But it's, you know, it's been so strange. But at the same time, I think it has been something that everybody has tried in good faith to really make work and, you know, sort of meet the situation where it is, rather than trying to force things out of it. And, you know, I mean, listen, I think I saw something that popped up here right before we came on that said that for the first time since late August, Monroe County's positivity rate, 7-day rolling positivity average, is under 1%. So, even with the students in town, even with, you know, trying to do things like this, you know, this area has been, you know, people have been good about, you know, following restrictions and rules, and it's been tough, and, you know, people can't see their loved ones. I haven't seen my mom since her birthday in December. Her assisted living facility has been closed down since then. I haven't seen my dad since last March. And, you know, that hardly makes me, unique, but the point is, you know, we're all doing it so that we can get through this, and without wanting to turn this into a podcast about, you know, public health and epidemiology, it does feel like we're maybe starting to see the other side of this a little bit. Cases coming down, you know, spring around the corner, vaccine distribution getting out, and maybe just, you know, all of us being allowed to start making plans for after we're able to maybe relax and just exhale a little bit more. So,
yeah, I agree with everything you said. And let's just hope that this is the last season like this, the only NCAA tournament that's played in this fashion. Although I think it'll be a great opportunity for the state of Indiana to host the event and showcase itself. Everyone, please continue to follow Zach Osterman on Twitter. Read his coverage at the Indy Star, and who knows, he could be back soon, the next couple weeks, maybe a couple months on Podcasts on the Brink. There's going to be a ton of IU developments over the next month, and obviously with the once the offseason gets here as well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of different things to figure out. So, Zach, thanks again for coming on, and we'll talk to everybody again next time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.